Hello and welcome to Amateur Radio Topics. I'm Kevin, VK6 Lima Whiskey, and in this episode we will be talking about a number of antenna designs, CQ Worldwide CW contest coming up, and just general conditions on the low bands. So it's been about 3 months since we posted the podcast, and been fairly busy during that time, making some progress with the low frequency antennas. We've got a fairly good setup here in terms of available space. I have two towers. So been doing a little bit of experimenting with 160 and 80 meters. I'm quite keen to try and find one antenna that would work for both bands adequately. So we're using a variation at the moment on an inverted L antenna, but it's not quite what it sounds. So the top is around about 95 feet, 27 meters high. And we have a vertical section of about 90 feet. And it's fed at the bottom of that vertical section. And there's around about a 20 meter counterpoise that runs horizontal to the ground, around about 3 meters off the ground. And then at the top of the antenna, top of the 95 feet, there's a sloping wire, runs out of around about 135 feet, close to 40 meters. And that comprises the antenna. So essentially, it looks a little bit like an off-center fed dipole, fed at the low point, around about 10 feet off the ground, at the junction between the vertical and the horizontal wire. And at that point, of course, it's not a 50 ohm feed either on 160 meters or 80 meters, but that is that's the point. We have a big 4-to-1 ballon at that junction, comprises of six FT240-61s, and that's made up in a ballon at the feed point. So haven't had any problems with that ballon at all with saturation. I've actually been using the same ballon and a similar antenna for the last 3 to 4 years in various guises. So it's varied a little bit between having a vertical section of around about 75 feet out to a vertical section of 100 feet. And this current antenna has a vertical section of around about 90 feet, about 20, 25 meters or so, 26 maybe meters. So the antenna's reasonably flexible with the format. And the reason this antenna is possibly a little bit different to what I've used before is that I've got it was originally an 80 meter dipole. So at the top of the mast, I have RG213 feeding the 80 meter dipole. And I didn't really want to take the tower down completely to put this new antenna up. So I left that feed line in place. So if you can imagine, instead of an inverted L that just runs up vertically and straight out horizontally, I've now got an inverted L off-center feed, and at the top of the mast, I have effectively a transmission line which drops down to ground level. And it did occur to me when I set this antenna up and I was modeling it on EasyNet that it was quite possible I could switch this transmission line to enable either horizontal or vertical favored polarization for this antenna. And that indeed does work. I did some quite interesting modeling on 80 meters and 160 meters, and also quite a lot of practical testing on those two bands with a simple switch at the base of the transmission line. So transmission line was cut to a certain length, taking into account the velocity factor. And essentially what we ended up with was a half wave transmission line on 80 meters and a quarter wave transmission line on 160 meters. And by either closing or opening the connection on that transmission line, it would affect the radiation pattern of the antenna on both 160 and 80. So this was quite interesting because I could, with a flick of a switch, I could listen to DX stations and figure out whether or not they were better on the horizontal or the vertical. And this is an interesting experiment because generally speaking, you don't always get the opportunity to do this with antennas, and it's the results are quite interesting. The perceived wisdom on the low bands, of course, is that you do need some vertical polarization, and that works if you've got a decent, sometimes a decent ground conductivity, and you are prepared to put down lots of radials, or you prepared to have elevated radials, both of which I've tried here. But in essence, this antenna doesn't really have a radial system. It just has a horizontal wire that runs out, as I say, for about 20 meters away from the feed point. And the advantage that it does have is that the feed point is not 50 ohms or 30 ohms or 25 ohms or whatever. The feed point is in the 200, 250 ohm category. So this does help a little bit to mitigate potential ground losses, having a higher impedance feed point. And the 4-to-1 balun takes care of that, of course, and gets it close to 50 ohms for the run back to the shack. And of course, on the low bands, on 160 and 80 meters, if you've got a slight SWR, it's not really going to matter that much. If you have a look at the SWR charts and run the figures on maybe a 30 meter run of RG213, RG8 type coax to your antenna on 160 and 80, even with an SWR of 3-to-1, you only really lose a fraction of a dB. The big issue is, can you match the feed line when it gets back into the shack? That's another story. But normally under 3-to-1, most internal antenna tuners on most radios will do it. And even on most linear amplifiers, the ones that have an ATU built in, such as the Expert range, they will quite easily handle anything up to 3-to-1. So I didn't get too stressed out about what the SWR might be on this. I was really more concerned about whether or not I could switch this radiation pattern and take a look and find out what was the best radiation pattern on 160 and what's the best radiation pattern for me on 80 meters. So the results are quite interesting because I've spent probably the last 2 to 3 months playing around on 160 in the evenings here, working quite a bit of DX and the odd early morning to see if we can find something coming through from Europe. Actually, the mornings haven't been quite as good as the evenings, and it has been when the band has been open, when 160 has been open, this antenna has been quite effective. And the interesting thing I found about it was that essentially the vertical angle of radiation, or the vertical format, I should say, because bear in mind the inverted L setup does have some vertical component to it. It's not as though I'm just switching from horizontal to vertical. I'm probably switching more from a mixed horizontal vertical with the inverted L to just a vertical. And under some conditions, the vertical worked better. Quite often within the Australian, New Zealand, Pacific region, maybe distances up to 5 or 6,000 kilometers, the vertical did seem to offer some improvement. Further away than that, the inverted L seem to work better. And I've got a good location here. I'm up on the top of a hill, but it's rocky ground. There's no real ground conductivity that naturally occurs up here. I've got no doubt that if I put down enough radials or enough elevated radials, I can get a vertical working okay. And I have been able to do that in the past. But for whatever reason, which may be slightly unexplained, the inverted L definitely seemed on average to have the better performance than the vertical. But it would vary from one evening to another, one morning to another, even during the same evening, it would vary in terms of what was the best antenna. But probably on average, the inverted L was the most useful format on 160 meters for me. And it's probably the antenna that I've worked most of the DX on, whether it's been DX to North America or it's been DX to Europe. And we've had some quite good openings from Perth back into Europe at around about 1400 Zulu, 1500 Zulu. So essentially sunset time in Europe, mainly Northern Europe, the OHs, the UA3s, the LAs, that sort of thing has been coming through at that time, and with some pretty good signals. And sometimes the propagation's quite spotlighted. One evening I worked LY7M, who's got a good signal and obviously got good receive capabilities. And I worked him, and I couldn't hear anything else. There was nothing else coming through from that area at all. And I kept calling CQ, and he reported back, just following the spots on the net, he reported back that I was still a good signal. Couldn't understand why nobody else was calling me. And I had the same happen with one of the UA3s as well, whereby I worked him, he's a good signal, maybe about 579, nothing else was on, nothing else was calling. So, but there's been quite a bit of activity, and this is all CW. This is all CW activity. I haven't really been doing any FT8 on 160 meters. I've played around a little bit with the mode. It's probably not really for me. I quite enjoy CW, and it's possible that some of the activity is down on FT8 and not on CW. That's quite likely. I think looking at the spots and the chat line on the ON4 KST facility, there's a lot of people on FT8, and I can understand that. 160 is a very difficult band, and FT8 is a very good low signal communicator. But for me, it has to be CW. That's probably my passion over the years. That's one of the things that's kept me in the hobby. So anyway, getting back to this inverted L antenna with the switching stub and the vertical versus horizontal mixed polarization. In general, on 160 meters, I'd probably say the inverted L was the better option for me over a period of time, even over the same day. But there were times when the vertical was better, and I worked plenty of DX on the vertical format as well. And I switched backwards and forwards on a regular basis, conducted various tests with different people. Sometimes the signals were the same, sometimes there was a difference. It was fairly random. So, and I had the same facility on 80 meters. I could switch backwards and forwards on 80 meters from the vertical to the horizontal / vertical mix of polarization. And that was probably a little bit more interesting, because 80 meters, it's not, I've had some good antennas up for 80 meters in the past. I've had a two element wire beam facing Europe. That's been worked very well. I had a dipole up at around about 100 feet, 28 meters or so, inverted V. That worked very well. But I was really keen to try and get this antenna working on two bands. And the thing I found on 80 meters was quite interesting, was that the vertical setup on 80 meters was actually quite good. It worked pretty well most of the time. It was probably better more often than I expected in the vertical type format than the traditional inverted L. So I played around a little bit with this and had the switching going backwards and forwards, 80 and 160 meters. And after a while, I came to the conclusion that I could probably redesign this slightly with this matching stub, so that I really didn't need to do any switching. Based on the fact that I was pretty happy with the inverted L vertical / horizontal polarization model for 160. That seemed to work best for me. And if I use that model and just made some adjustments to the matching stub, I could actually get a similar performance on 80 meters with a mix of vertical and horizontal polarization on 80 meters. So this is what I did. I changed the matching stub from being either a quarter wave or a half wave for the bands in question. And I lengthened the matching stub such that the antenna would work effectively on both bands pretty well on 160 is the traditional inverted L radiation pattern on EasyNet. And the 180 meters, it was the same. It was a combination of the vertical and the horizontal polarization. So 80 meters, it gives quite an interesting pattern. There's quite a bit of low angle radiation on 80 meters, and also a little bit of high angle, but probably dominated a little bit by the low angle. There is a bit of a null in the direction of the sloping wire, which is not ideal, but it's still very effective. Probably the direction of the sloping wire for me is probably in the direction of maybe JA, maybe a little bit to the east of JA. So, but the JAs are not too difficult to work from here. It's much harder to make an impression trying to work into Europe on 80 meters. And this is the big thing, particularly with CQ Worldwide coming up. You need a fairly good signal into Europe to be able to work the stations in CQ Worldwide with a degree of regularity, or to try and hold your frequency. That's the other big issue. So over the years, there's plenty of antennas that I've put up, and outside of contest conditions, I've thought, this antenna is a really good antenna. And then I get into a contest and the antenna's maybe not quite as good because the noise levels will be higher. There's more stations on the band. There's more QRM. Everything's jammed up really tight. And 80 meters is a fairly good example. When I had the two element wire beam for 80 meters facing Europe, when the conditions were okay, I could just about pretty well hold a frequency and run stations into Europe on 80 meters in CQ Worldwide. So I knew that antenna was working fairly well. But I had some other ideas about what I really wanted to do on 40 meters. And that antenna was kind of getting in the way. The two towers here are around about 15 meters apart. So I've got some options to put that two element wire beam up for 80 meters. But I was keen to try and find something else that I could get some good performance out of without having to go the extent of the wire beam. So broadside to, on 80 meters, broadside to the wire, there is some gain. EasyNet shows the gain is about, maybe around about 5 dBi at a fairly low angle of radiation. And this is kind of borne out with the experiments that I've conducted working on 80 meters, been working a lot of Europeans, maybe around about 1 hour before their sunset. So that's a good sign. And not just Northern Europeans, but the signals down into DL and SP and that sort of thing. So not just the Northern Europeans. And in the mornings, it's been pretty good on 80 meters, and I've been able to work some US long path in the mornings on this antenna. So essentially it's fairly omnidirectional. So say it's got a slight null in the direction of the sloping wire, which you maybe kind of expect. And broad shot side, there is some gain, which is quite nice. So it's a very effective antenna for work in Europe or the US. It's been interesting this weekend actually, because the LZDX contest has been on, and it's quite a good warm-up contest for CQ Worldwide, because it's a similar sort of format. It's got a zone exchange. So this is going to be a good opportunity to check out the 80 meter performance. And it seemed to perform quite well under contest conditions. The LZDX contest doesn't extend to 160 meters, so that's not particularly helpful for 160. But 160 is another story, because really, if the band's open at 160 and you've got a fairly decent antenna, you can work DX. If the band's closed, it doesn't really matter what you've got. You're really struggling to work anything. So we've just got to hope for some fairly good conditions for this next weekend on 160. So this antenna has been quite an interesting experiment. The modeling has been quite successful. It pretty well models and works the way it should do based on the modeling in EASY NEC. The 4-to-1 ballon is fairly critical. I did build a 4-to-1 air ballon as well, which is quite a big construction. And I played around a little bit with that, but it didn't really give me too many advantages. And I found that by making the Ballon suitable for 160, it really wasn't so good on 80. So I went back to the, in the end, I went back to the ferrite Ballon. And actually that ferrite Ballon with the six FT240-61s, I've been using that same Ballon now for around about 4 to 5 years on the different variations of this antenna. And for quite a while, it wasn't even in a weatherproof box. It was, I just had it lashed up on the feed line, and it survived all of that. It's I use the Teflon coax, the RG142. It's about 5mm diameter, and Teflon the Teflon insulation. It's very tough. So now it's in a box. It's all enclosed in a box. I've engineered it a little bit better than what it was. And it's this, exactly the same Ballon as I've been using for the last few years. So quite optimistic that this antenna is going to work well for me in CQ Worldwide next weekend. Obviously, conditions have to be okay for this to happen. And VK6 is a long way from anywhere. Certainly a long way from Europe and the States on the low bands. But it's important to have a fairly decent low band antenna because of the multiplier issue in CQ Worldwide. It's fairly critical. You've really got to try and make sure, even if you don't make a lot of QSOs on the low bands, you've got to make sure you get some multipliers, some countries and some zones. So you need at least a good enough signal you can go and do some search and pounce. You don't really have to run these guys on the low bands. It's better to leave the running to the frequencies, the high frequencies, where it's much easier to hold the frequency. So on 40, I've got my two element beams, which are both reversible. So one is on Europe, short path, long path, which also helps me with Caribbean stations and maybe South America if I'm very lucky. And I've got another two element 40 meter beam on the second tower. So these are both wire beams. They're fed with a certain length of coax, which is then switched, and it enables me to reverse these wire beams from the shack, which is really useful. There's no rotators involved. They're full size elements. They're nicely spaced. And there's really not any interaction between the two of them because they're at right angles to each other. And the difference between switching from say the Europe short path to the US long path antenna is quite dramatic. The front to side ratio, I suppose, best way to describe it, is very high. The front to back on these antennas is probably around about 10 to 15 dBs. But they seem to work fairly well. I can certainly hold a frequency on 40 meters, either into Europe or the States. And I've got the facility to also work the States on the long path in the mornings here. So as an example, this morning on 40 meters, I was still working US stations on the long path in the LZDX contest at close to 2 hours past my sunrise. So that was pretty good, and very happy with that antenna on 40. On the HF bands, I'm still using the spider beam, which is three elements on 15, 4 elements on 10 meters. Don't know whether we're going to see any action at all on 10 meters. Had a bit of a listen this afternoon. 15 meters was very good this afternoon working Europe, but nothing at all on 10 meters that I heard. Something might come up, might get some JA openings on 10 meters if we're lucky, but it's hard to predict. If it's ever going to happen, it'll happen in CQ Worldwide. The level of activity is such that if there is an opening, there's normally stations on to take advantage of that, and there's always stations on the lookout. So we do enjoy a reasonable path between VK6 and JA. So even if there's no east-west propagation on 10 meters, we may get some JA. And the conditions look like they're going to be fairly settled as well coming up next weekend, unless something dramatic happens on the surface of the sun. I think the flux at the moment is around about 70, so it's nothing fabulous. There's no sunspots, but the A and the K indexes are quite low. I think there's been a little bit of auroral activity over the last day or two, but it's not been too dramatic. So overall, the conditions look like they could be quite good, and it's going to be an interesting weekend. My good friend Bern, VK2IA, he will be operating from his station over there in Queensland, and it's a bit of competition between us to see who can take out the top spot in Australia. So that's going to be an interesting competition. He's got a good setup there. He's been working with John, VK4CT. They're building quite a good station. He's got a good location. He's a very good operator. And it will be a very close run thing, as it normally is between us, whether it's CQ Worldwide or it's the WPS contest. It's always very close. So that kind of spurs us both on a little bit to improve our stations and to try and maximise what we can do. It seems a bit strange to be competing with somebody that's maybe 3,500 kilometres away, but that's the reality of it in Australia. He gets very good propagation to the States. He gets probably a better shot at the US than I do. Plus, he gets a little bit probably better long path to Europe, whereas I get a much better short path to Europe, and I get a good HF bands long path to the States, and sometimes that extends to 40 meters as well. So it's different contests for both of us. From VK6, South America is a real struggle. Even the Caribbean can be a struggle. South America particularly is a struggle because it's over the South Pole, whereas Bern, he does much better to South America, but he struggles with Africa. But at the moment, I think I'd probably trade South America for the activity that's in Africa. So it's kind of like just going to make the most of the opportunities that come up. 48 hours is a long time to operate a contest. You get more than one shot at each path, which is a good thing. Normally, I need to try and get maybe 2 or 3 hours sleep on maybe the Sunday morning here in Perth when the bands go a bit dead. And otherwise, I've done the 48 hours straight through before, but it becomes very difficult towards the end of the contest to try and keep everything together and then to not make mistakes. That's the other issue. It's very easy to make mistakes once you start getting tired. So using the same software as normal, the N1MM software, which is really good, and the radio is an IC7610, and I've got an expert amplifier. SPE expert amplifier, which is a nice amplifier. So that's pretty well the wrap up on CQ Worldwide and what I've been doing with antennas. Well, I think once the contest is over, I'd like to do a little bit more experimentation with the inverted L with the switch stub. I think I'll probably try and modify that a little bit and concentrate a little bit more on 160. I've always been quite keen on 160 meters. It's a bit of a frustrating band, but when the conditions are good, it's great fun. And I think maybe I can still optimize this switch polarization idea on 160, I believe. But let's see. The 160 meters is normally pretty good through sort of November, December, through into sort of March, April, and then things change a little bit in terms of trying to work the Northern Hemisphere. But of course, at that time, I know my good friend Steve, VK6VZ, and Phil, VK6GX, I know they're pretty keen to try and work South America on 160 meters. So our winter time is definitely the time to do that, because there's more grey line type openings to South America or the Caribbean. So that's probably about it for this episode. If you have any questions, you can contact me via qrz.com. Just look for VK6 Lima Whiskey. Or you can email me direct on hamradiotopics@gmail.com. And once the contest is over next weekend, we'll probably do a follow-up episode, a bit of a debrief on what happened, what went well, what went wrong, that sort of thing. It's always interesting to analyse it after the event. Always think you can do better once you get to the end of the contest. But it's you can only do what you can do during the contest. And the main reason is to have some fun. That's the overriding factor. I still really enjoy contesting. I've been contesting for a long time, since I was a teenager. And the main thing is really to make sure it's enjoyable. If it's not enjoyable, well, you've really got to question why you might be doing it, to put this amount of time and effort, money and lack of sleep into an event. So the main thing is have some fun, enjoy it. I like the competition, I like to be competitive, but once it's all over, then it's I look forward to the next event, the next contest. So 73s for now, and if you are on CW over the weekend, maybe give me a call. Be very pleased to work you during the contest. 73s from Kevin, VK6 Lima Whiskey.